Welcome back, everybody, to the X-Cast. The truth is in here. I'm your host, Tony Black, as ever. And once again, for this penultimate episode of the first season of The X-Files and the first season of The X-Cast, I guess, I'm joined by my stalwart compadre, Mr. Andrew Brooker.
Hello, mate.
Thanks for coming back on for your third in a row, I think. You really are a glutton for punishment.
I am. Thanks for having me, though. I do enjoy it.
Oh, cheers. Thank you. Yeah, it's always good. Today, we're looking at the 23rd episode of The X-Files, Roland. Roland is, as I say, the 23rd episode of the first season of The X-Files. It first aired on May the 6th, 1994, and was written by Chris Ruppenthal and directed by David Nutter. The story sees Mulder and Scully encounter a mentally handicapped janitor who is the only suspect in the murders of two propulsion research scientists. Now, let me preface this with the use of the word mentally handicapped doesn't come from me. It comes from the Wikipedia article for this episode. And I'm not entirely sure how PC that term is anymore.
There's not really a PC way of saying it, though, is there? Because they don't actually say what he has.
Right, exactly. So in terms of the character of Roland, I'm going to try and avoid using the word handicapped, if I can, because I don't know how fair that is. So, yeah, but that's the gist of it.
Keats?
Yeah.
Dr. Keats?
Looks like they held okay.
We're with the FBI. I'm Agent Mulder. This is Agent Scully. We understand you discovered Dr. Surnow this morning.
What was left of him?
How do you suppose he became trapped in the wind tunnel?
Someone must have shut him in. The door can only be opened or locked from in there.
By computer.
We've already been through this with the police. How many times do we have to rehash it?
Another member of your team died a short time ago, isn't that correct?
Yes. Arthur Greene. He was killed in an automobile accident in November. I'm Frank Nallette. I'm also on the project.
Are you certain it was an accident?
What are you driving at?
Your work seems to be a perfect target for industrial espionage.
Who wrote this?
Ron was working on it when I left.
You see, the handwriting here doesn't seem to match any of the other handwriting on the board.
It isn't mine.
What about Roland Fuller?
Roland's the janitor.
Well, according to the police report, he was the only other person here last night.
Roland didn't do that.
How do you know?
Let's just say Roland isn't exactly a rocket scientist.
So out of 10 then, Brooker, where would you place Roland?
I think a solid 6. It's a 6 out of 10 episode for me, I reckon. Mm. It done a lot of things right, but the problem was it's one of quite a few recently that have had very similar themes. You know, things like the soul swapping and that kind of stuff. And it feels, at this point now, it just feels a bit tired. But the guy that plays Roland is awesome. And he plays it really, really well. Mm. And I think I'm quite a big fan of his. And he definitely ups the score for me a little bit.
I've no idea how to say his name. I mean, I've seen him in tons of things over the years. He was quite memorable in 24, the first season of 24. Back in the day.
He was. I think that was probably, outside of The X-Files, that's probably the first thing I remember watching him in. And to be fair, when I watched Roland the other day, I went, oh shit, it's him.
Yeah. He's one of them, isn't he? he crops up in loads of it. He was in something I watched the other day. I think it was Selfless, the Ryan Reynolds, bit of a rubbish film, really. But I'm sure he cropped up in that. It was something. And he's one of those that just pops up. I think you say his name, Jellico Evenek, I'm going to go with. But he's one of them, you'll know him when you see him. And yeah, he is pretty great as Roland in a bloody hard role.
He is pretty great in almost everything I think I've seen him in ever.
He's pretty solid, isn't he? But it's one of those things that's immediately there's an element of, in terms of whether it's correct or not, because you've obviously got a man who isn't disabled playing a disabled, severely disabled character in terms of, not in terms of mobility, but in terms of, you know, mental health and things like that. And it's always a little bit, oh, God, should, you know, should this really be happening? You know, should, it's always a big question mark with this. Should you, should they have cast a genuinely disabled, and I use that term loosely as well, disabled man in that role, do you think? Or do you think it's okay?
I think it's perfectly acceptable to have an actor, a very good actor, do the job. I remember seeing a thing similar a couple of months ago when Hush was released on Netflix. And there was kind of like this mini uproar about the fact they had a person play the main role who wasn't deaf or mute, playing a deaf and mute person. Mm. Well, you have to draw the line somewhere. You can't necessarily find a deaf or mute person that fits the role right. And I think the same thing can be said here, you know, and we are talking a time of relatively low budgets, especially for like the X-Files. And we're also talking, you know, mid-90s. There might have been a few mentally handicapped people acting, but not that many, and maybe not many that they could have put into that kind of role. And to be fair, you have to ask them to do some pretty hardcore things, especially in that episode.
Yeah.
Maybe they just, the ones they know weren't capable of doing it. It is a hard question. I think it's perfectly acceptable to have, however you pronounce his name, Ivanick, I'm pretty sure.
Just go with Ivanick, it's easier.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure, I think it's okay to have him play that role. I don't think it's an issue at all.
I think, on balance, I would agree, really. I think it's okay in the context of the fact that Roland isn't portrayed as particularly, you know, an idiot or stupid or, you know, mocked or anyway. There is a sensitivity to the episode, and, you know, especially to his relationship with the character of Tracy, who is also disabled. And, you know, we'll get into that more later. But I think overall it's okay and it works. It was described as a little bit abstract in terms of how they portrayed the character of Arthur Grable, who obviously is the other side of Roland, effectively, the twin that he never knew. Director David Nutter said he tried to focus on making Grable more threatening. He said, we had to create the villain in Roland's head. So I think the more the audience could relate to Roland and feel and care for him, then it would make the villain that much worse and that much more diabolical. Which is an interesting way of putting it, because it must have been difficult in a way to write, because you're talking about the bad guy, in essence, in inverted commas, is dead, you know, and he's basically a frozen head in a lab who is psychically controlling his twin. And when you say it out loud, it's ridiculous.
Oh, yeah, when you say it out loud, it's absolutely ludicrous. And I think this is the same, this is kind of what I was getting at, the thing with the actor that plays Roland. He has to convince us that the flashbacks he's seeing, or flash forwards, or whatever it is he's in, are scaring the living shit out of him. I think that's a hard task for anybody to do, and I think he does it really well.
No, I agree. Nutter said that they tried to concentrate on Ivanek's depiction of Roland generally. He said, basically, when I knew I had him in the role, I thought it was important to push that as much as possible to help outweigh the frailties in the script. And that's exactly what we're saying, really. And I think most people would agree that the best thing about Roland is Roland, really. And then that's what keeps the episode above water. And I think I would give it a 6, like you, actually. I think that was roughly the score that was rattling around my head, about 6 out of 10. Speaking of Roland, it was composer Mark Snow wrote a wistful theme for Roland, and it was quite distinctive. And I mentioned this, I've got this in my notes. David Nutter said that a weird little theme on piano would be great for this character. And Snow said, well, I thought Chris Carter isn't into melodic music, so we have to do this just right. So I came up with this simple, very childlike, slightly forlorn, sad piece. And I always remember it featuring on The Truth and the Light, the X-Files music composition full of all that Mark Snow's tracks, which came out in the late 90s. And it is a memorable, sad theme, actually, that goes through this, isn't it?
Melancholy is a good word for it, isn't it? It's one of those kind of things. It is very sad. And it fits the character very well, actually. I think Mark Snow done an awesome job with that little bit of music.
Yeah, definitely, yeah. But yeah, it's overall, I think the general reception was that everyone was a little bit like, yeah, it was all right. Overall, it didn't quite, you know, it didn't quite work. And I think that's the thing. It wanted to be a few, we'll get more into this, but it wanted to be a couple of different things. And I don't think it quite worked in that context completely. Let's get deeper into the episode then, into Roland. So the teaser opens with introducing Roland straight away, really. And, you know, you've got Ivanek immediately immersed in the part as the disabled, seemingly severely quite autistic Roland. Although, as you said, we're never really told what his disability is specifically. We're assuming it's autism, a severe autism. But yeah. It's not a debilitating disease enough for him not to be able to work or to, you know, to understand what people are saying. And that's why it's horrible when the doctor, who you see at the beginning, Keats, he's a right prick to him, isn't he? Right at the start.
Oh yeah, he's a complete arsehole. And it's one of those times where you go, God, I hope something really horrible happens to you. Just fuck you.
Yeah, that's what I thought, yeah. I was like, yeah, I hope you're the guy who dies in the teaser, because one of you obviously is going to die. You know.
Yeah.
But obviously it doesn't turn out to be him yet, anyway. In the teaser, it's a doctor called Surnow, who is played by an actor called Matthew Walker, who appeared again on the show in season 4's Gethsemane, the final episode, and he played quite a more of a prominent character called Arlinsky, who was part of a recovery team for an EBE locked in an ice cube, basically. Not an ice cube, that makes it sound really small. an ice sheet. But yeah, it's him who, you know, bites the dust. I did like how he dies, though. I thought the use of the wind tunnel and everything was quite good. It was quite a good set, actually.
It was very cool, actually. My favourite bit of it was the nowadays, if you made that episode, that, you know, there'd be blood everywhere and screaming and bits of body all over the shop. But this, you just get a little splat.
Yeah,
and that's it.
Yeah.
Quite a gross little splat as well,
like that.
Yeah,
but I thought that because I was like, well, what? It's good because it doesn't need to show the blood, does it? You know, you see, it's that great shot where Roland walks past the window, and then you see him fly past the window, and then you just hear the crunch, and then Roland just walks past the window again with his broom, just like nothing's happened. And I thought that's really good. That's really quite weird and disturbing that this guy has just had a horrific death, just sucked into like a fucking wind tunnel jet. And it was one of those teasers as well where you don't quite know what's going on. You know, quite often we've talked about this in episodes we've done together, but you get a teaser where it's pretty obvious that it's probably a ghost, or it's like somebody who can shoot fire, or it's somebody. But this is one of those teasers where you go, so what's going on exactly? Who is this guy? What can he do? He's writing the equations out. What? Yeah, I think that's good, isn't it?
Yeah, the thing with it is, you, because all you've gotten from Roland is the sense that he's, like you say, probably autistic, and he's, you know, he's struggling with the door to get in. But that's pretty much all you see of him, and you know, the only impression you get of him is that, you know, he's, you know, possibly mentally disabled, but there's no, you know, there's no indication that he wants to do what he's just done. There's, you know, there's no indication that he's even capable of doing it. It's a really clever little teaser, actually. I quite liked it.
To be fair, I think it's one of the best parts of the episode, actually, the teaser. I think it's a good opening, and it's a curious opening, and it leaves you wondering quite what's going on, really.
Absolutely. No, I agree completely. Definitely the best bit of the episode.
Yeah, I think probably, yeah, amongst it. And then obviously, once we get past the credits, you've got a little bit of small talk, actually, with Mulder and Scully as they enter, because they're talking about how Scully went to a wedding, and it just seemed like they had a couple of lines of dialogue to fill, and they went, what should we get them talking about? Oh, okay, that's Scully went to a wedding. I just don't think that they would be in the car and Mulder's going, oh, how was that wedding you went to, Scully? Yeah, it was all right, actually. I just can't imagine them having those conversations.
It's like the tail end of a "how was your weekend" conversation, wasn't it? It was a little bit weird and a little bit kind of not X-Files, just not quite normal for what we've been watching for the past few hours. No, I agree, it's a bit strange.
Yeah, it could be because the writer Chris Ruppenthal isn't. He's. I think this is the first episode he did. I think he did another one in season 2, but he didn't really last beyond that. And he was He was a writer, I think. I've seen him on the credits of Quantum Leap and things like that in the past. So I think he's probably comes from a little bit more of a character drama background. And to be fair, Roland is a character drama, really. More than anything else. At times it wants to be like an industrial espionage thriller and things like that, but it doesn't really do that. It is a character drama. So maybe that's his background really coming out, trying to write some humanized moments between Mulder and Scully. But you know, the one thing that strikes me, though, when you see this in TV, not just The X-Files, but loads of things like films and whatnot, when people are having conversations like that, just as they arrive at their destination, I keep thinking, what were you talking about for the 2 hours you were travelling?
you were sat silent for the entire car journey, and now you decided to have that talk.
Yeah. Every time, I always think this. I think, well, that's not how it would work. By the time you got there, you'd have talked through everything, right? And then, you know... It's one of those funny things you see in drama that just doesn't happen in the real world.
But then again, I mean, the inane bollocks that you end up talking with co-workers after that first 2 hours, that doesn't make for good TV, really.
It's true. Who was your favourite Power Ranger, Scully? It's Blue. But yeah, you've got, after that, an interesting moment. As Mulder's explaining the case, as he wants to do, There is a momentary, you know, mention of a UFO, and it's like the show still hasn't quite got out of the habit of having to mention the aliens. You get the feeling that Chris Carter wrote that line afterwards and went, right, well, we need to mention that this isn't aliens again, right? Let's just put that in.
Just so you all remember that there are aliens coming at some point.
Yeah. Yeah. It's been a few episodes. There will be aliens. This isn't one with aliens, but don't worry, it's fine. They are coming. It's that sense of, in the end, the X-Files was confident enough that it didn't need to keep doing that. And it's one of those things. You think by this point they would have been confident enough, but it's only really the next episode and onwards that the show really starts to get more confidence. But we'll be getting to that soon. You see the relationship between Roland and Tracy when they're together in the home. No, I think, like I said earlier, I think there's a sweetness to that in how it's portrayed. I mean, I don't work with disabled people, but I sense that there's a certain element that would be what it's like.
No, I don't work with disabled people either. I have to base a lot of my, kind of how I see things like that is that I only ever get it from TV and TV shows like this.
Mm.
I mean, I kind of hope it's like that because it is really nice. It's a really sweet relationship between those two. I really like it.
Yeah, because obviously they're both suffer from similar debilitations, and It pays off nicely at the end, you know. There's even more development of that towards the end, and little moments between them, which, you know, shows that there's a genuine care going on. But
yeah,
luckily, it's all treated with that element of sensitivity, you know. And there is mention in the dialogue, you know, when Scully's talking about savants and autism and things. It is dropped in there, but it is quite threadbare, isn't it? You know, they're talking about how, you know, it's not Roland's handwriting and things like that, and. Yeah, there is that threadbare element to what they describe, but
yeah, I do think if they were making that episode now, I think there'd be a lot more detail as to what's going on with Roland. I think just because, like you say, you know, in this day and age, you know, we don't even know what we can say, you know?
Yeah,
you know, we don't even know how to describe him because he hasn't been described to us.
Yeah,
you know, and we don't know what we can say without maybe offending somebody. So I do think nowadays that level of detail would be there for us.
Because there's a lot more checks and balances, aren't there, these days? You'd find that I think Fox would be a lot more like, oh, well, you can't say that. You can't describe it like that. You've got to do this or you've got to do this.
But at the same time, I wonder if it's been done on purpose so that we're meant to think that maybe it's something to do with his mental handicap that's causing it.
Possibly. It could be. That's true. That could be.
Because again, we're talking mid-90s again. You know, the stuff like this isn't necessarily understood that well by the general populace. So, you know, maybe we're supposed to be a little bit worried about him. Just playing off the fears that we would have had anyway.
Mm.
Not that I think it's right or correct at
all. No, I know. But we grew up in the 90s. You know, we grew up with the playground terminology for these kind of people. It was nasty, you know. And it's the kind of thing I'm not saying it's gone now because it hasn't. But there is more of an understanding and more of a, you know, an immediate... You know, that's out of order. You can't say that. Than there was 20 years ago. So it is true. It is true, really. obviously, it's though at this point that Roland is really being established seemingly as the bad guy. You know, when he kills Keats, finally. Although, I tell you what struck me. The guy was listening to, like, rock music in his earphones. And I was like,
yeah.
You don't seem like the kind of dude who would be listening to, like, relatively hard 80s rock.
No.
You know, it didn't. That was weird. It felt like let's give him a character affectation. He likes rock. You know he doesn't.
Of course he doesn't. But it was a nice, satisfying death, though, wasn't it?
Oh, God, it was nasty, though. I mean, this is the thing. It's like, I think that's one of the nastiest deaths that they've done on The X-Files, putting someone's head in liquid nitrogen. Fucking hell.
It was pretty hardcore. And I watched it again this morning so I could take notes. And I had to laugh when he threw him on the floor and his head shattered and he trod on his ear as he went out the door. It crunched under his foot. Bloody hell.
It's nasty. It is nasty. But it positions Roland as seemingly the bad guy. But then there's question marks when he starts having his visions and his flashes of you know, him as a child and of killing, you know, trying to kill Tracy and all this. We're still at the point, actually. It reminds me a bit of Eve in the sense of how with Eve there was a point where you didn't know quite where the story was going. You didn't quite know what the mystery was. And for the first half, it could have gone anywhere.
Yeah, you were still waiting for somebody to tie it all together for you.
Yeah, exactly. And at this point, you're still waiting for that little connective that makes you go, well, what's really going on with Roland? Is he possessed? Is it some kind of memory transference thing? Although, as you said, it ultimately boils down to a similar idea that we've seen done a few times this season, which is to do with kind of like different people inhabiting different people, like we saw in Born Again and we saw in Lazarus.
This was kind of my biggest issue with the episode, is the fact that it feels, at this point, not obviously not when we get to the end and things are explained, although it doesn't improve it much, but at this point, you're very much like, you've done this a couple of times already.
Yeah.
Someone needs to, in that writer's room, needs to have an original thought.
Yeah, exactly. It felt like they were... It wasn't obviously exactly the same story, but there is regurgitating elements, isn't there? And you're like, well, yeah, this is a bit similar.
I am very aware of the irony of complaining about the same story being told on and on again when we're talking about The X-Files. You know, let's be fair about this. It got almost 10 years out of telling the same story.
It's true.
You know, over and over again. But at this point, I was very much, and I think a lot of it is because, you know, we've watched a few recently with the purpose of being critical towards these episodes for recording this, and you get to look at them and go, you've done this already twice.
Yeah. Exactly. And yeah, there is that element. And but I think we're allowed to be ironic. We're allowed. We can do it. We're picking the series apart, so you know. But yeah, it is you are starting to get some idea when... Well, actually, I think there's a point where you start to leap ahead of Mulder and Scully, because once they piece together through some pretty decent old investigative work, and they start to connect Arthur Grable and Roland's birthdays, and it's a pretty... I don't know about you, but at that point I went, well, they're obviously related then, aren't they? And this is some kind of mind thing going on.
Well, yeah, I mean, it clicked almost instantly at that point, didn't it?
Yeah.
Although, I mean, the curveball of the head a little later on was definitely... I didn't see that one coming, I think.
Yeah.
But you know, when you figure out, you know, and everything just kind of slots into place. Oh, they're clearly twins, you know. Yeah, at that point, I'm on board with this now. I see where you're going. Weirdly, we're ahead of Mulder and Scully on that one. You kind of think, well, maybe it should have clicked for you as quickly as it did for us.
Well, I think there's the point where I started to go, well, come on, guys, was when they're doing that computer model of Grable's face and scaling it down to Roland, because it's almost like, you know, Christopher Reeve in Superman, obvious. You know, you look at him and you go, that's obviously Roland with a beard. It's like...
You literally done the Clark Kent thing as well by going, just take the glasses off and let's have a look.
Yeah. You know, it is that silliness where you go, oh, come on. You don't need to take the beard off, take the glasses off, take his hair down. It's obviously the same guy, isn't it? And yeah. I was a bit like, well, they're behind for behind's sake here. And I was a bit like, it's pretty, it connects pretty quickly. But it, as you say, there is that slight left turn taken into the head and Kranix, which I didn't see coming when they when cryo freezing comes into it.
Yeah, it was a weird addition to the episode. I mean, it was a very cool addition to the episode. You know, no pun intended at all.
That's a good one. That's a good one.
It was, you know, it was a very cool addition to the episode. I was really impressed. I was like, that's... And the fluctuating temperature on his pod, I don't know what you call it, container.
Head pod.
The Tupperware thing. His head, you know, whatever. that was a really interesting little addition to the episode. I went, well, now you've done something to make this a bit different from the other ones that are very, very similar. So, yeah, I'm down with this. Let's keep going.
Yeah, exactly. Although I did a little bit think of Futurama with the head in the jar.
Yeah, like, that's right.
If that head had started talking, then yeah. but it's a shame in a way. They don't do more with the Kranix thing. I don't know how they would have done, but it feels like we don't necessarily know enough about Grable and those guys. Because, you know, at the beginning you've got like Cernay, the guy, and Keats, the guys who die, and then Nolette, who's effectively the villain of the piece in a bit, really, the other villain of the piece. And they're all arguing, yeah, aren't they, about the work and about what they're trying to create. And, you know, you've got the one guy who's talking about doing it for the work, and then the other guys are talking about the financial things. And, you know, ultimately, again, it boils down to the fact that, you know, it's that, again, a bit like Born Again, which is, as again, the whole soul thing. The kind of conspiracy of guys who are trying to do over somebody who's dead, or do you know what I mean? It's that same, yeah, sort of idea of somebody who was wronged in life, you know, finding a way to reach from beyond the grave to
exact their revenge.
Yeah, basically. And in this case, it's about industrial espionage and stealing people's work and stuff. But it's a bit like, well, like you said, we've been here before, and you could, I think, have had a more interesting story, surely, about Grable and what he was doing. And, you know, ultimately, the science isn't really what it's about either. You know, I thought it was going to be tied into the jet propulsion, and they were going to be onto some freaky science, or, you know, they could have done that instead and tied Roland is into that. It just seemed like a less interesting plot the more you got into it, really.
Yeah, and I think the problem is actually they spent, considering they didn't really go anywhere with it, they spent far too long having Roland finished the science when it went absolutely nowhere.
Well, yeah, you exactly.
There was no point in the story where we needed to know about it, but yet we saw him, you know, doing maths and things in more than one scene. Like, well, why? Unless you're going to come out and tell me, you know, there's a reason for him doing it. Because don't tell me this guy's come back from the dead to finish doing his maths homework, because I don't believe it.
Well, I think I'm assuming the idea that the reason they kept showing that was because they wanted to underscore the point that it's not Roland doing those equations, it's Grable. And you're like, well, but that's obvious. We get that. That as soon as you tell us that they're related, we pretty much can connect the dots and go, okay, well, Grable's either alive and he's controlling him, or he's possessed him, or something like that, and it's obviously not Roland. So, yeah, it's, again, feeling that little bit like, well, you get the idea. You know, you don't need to keep labouring the point. And it does do that a bit, the script. It does labour the point a bit to keep the story going, in a way. And as I've said before, the only thing that really keeps it interesting is what's happening to Roland and this kind of duality and this, you know... The fact that you've got a man who can't articulate properly and who can't really grasp a lot of concepts, who is being almost inhabited by somebody who is super intelligent and has, you know, there's a few points made about the genetics of it later on, about chromosomes in the womb that caused basically Roland to be disabled and Grable to be a genius. I got to say, that in a way, that didn't sit right with me, because it felt like a little bit that it was making light of, not making light as in taking the mick, but sort of, I don't know how to explain it properly.
It was a weird thing. It was almost as if to say, maybe, almost to say it's okay that Roland's like this because someone else benefited from that.
Right, well, yeah.
What
yeah.
the fuck? That's not an okay thing to suggest.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, oh, well, there's obviously, it's the science. Roland is disabled because of, you know, the fact that if his twin brother hadn't been a genius, Roland would have been fine. Well, hang on a minute. that's not how it works. And even though there is science involved in what they're talking about with chromosomes, I don't buy that. And I think it simplifies it a little bit for me. And I think that
it makes the issue... makes too light of the issue that Roland has. I think it simplifies it down too much, and it does it very much. It almost mocks not just Roland really, but you know for hoping not to get on a high horse or a soapbox. But it doesn't tend to make light and mock any mentally handicapped person. And again. If you do that now, never, never, ever would that be allowed to be done.
No. It's just slightly dangerous ground to go on, I think. And it didn't quite sit right with me, that. But
it seems bizarre that I'm having it was a different time conversation with someone of my own generation, not like my nan. You know what I mean?
That's unusual. because people of the generation before this and before that would have had a very different view on it all, you know, and that's what evolution's all about, isn't it, you know?
Yeah.
But yeah, it's a bit iffy. They don't hash it up, but they don't quite get it right either. But there was a scene where, a really odd scene where Mulder talks about a dream he had with Roland about his father and about drowning in a pool and things like that. Which really seemed odd. It's very unusual that Mulder talks about his family for a start. And I think it's one of those things where it was before Chris Carter had fully figured out what the deal was with Mulder's family. Yeah. And, you know, there's almost a hint that he's talking like he's lost his father in this. But he hasn't. And I think it was a case that Chris Ruppenthal maybe wrote this and Chris Carter went, yeah, it's fine. That's okay. I think had he known what he was going to do with the Mulders, I don't think he'd have done that. Apparently, it was originally written to be his sister that he's talking about, diving in a pool to search for his sister. But it was changed to be his father, which is even weirder, actually, oddly, because it would make more sense for it to be Samantha, because that's always on his mind, you know, really, at the back of his mind. And we haven't heard anything about Samantha for donkeys.
That is a weird change to make, isn't it? Because it's not like there's a reason to do it because we don't want anybody focusing on his sister at this point, because like you say, he's always focusing on his sister. That's a weird change to make.
It is odd. It is odd. And it almost seems like a there's two mentions of family on both sides, you know, and you think, well, are they just mentioning these people just so we know that Mulder's got a father? By the way, he has got a dad, you know. We might see them one day. It's like when Mulder brings up Scully. He says, Scully, you've got a couple of brothers, haven't you? You've got a brother. Yeah, I've got an older one and a younger one. And he's like, oh, do you need to make that parallel? It's like, you're just reminding us that these people have got siblings. Just seemed odd. It just seemed like a couple of little things that didn't work fully. And that was an odd scene. It doesn't feel like Mulder would be that open with somebody, but maybe, and this is awful to say, but maybe it's because Roland is disabled that Mulder could do that, and that he was trying to communicate and find a way to reach Roland, to reach him understanding.
I could see that, and again, I think if you looked at it now, you'd probably look at it and say, you know, it's possible that Mulder has a connection with him, can maybe not relate to him, you know, on that kind of level, but can certainly. You know, Mulder ain't the he's a pretty smart dude, but he's a bit obsessive now, isn't he? It's possible that maybe he finds a little bit of solace talking to a guy who maybe, and you know, Mulder doesn't know, we don't know how much attention this guy's paying to him.
Mm.
Yeah, maybe Mulder finds a little bit of catharsis in talking to him.
Could be. It could be. The other thing that struck me with that dream, which was me probably looking too hard into it, but retroactively, Mulder talks about how when he dived into the pool to look for his father, there was another man watching him like he was watching him to drown. And I immediately thought, Smoking Man. You know, it's like, it almost felt like an oblique reference to the fact Mulder's got two fathers. you know, which is something that carries through, obviously, later on in the series. But it wouldn't be at this point. But it was just interesting the way you can retroactively look at things and go, could that be... Yeah, it's just interesting. It's just nice picking those things out, because even though they don't realise it sometimes, the writers do these things. And you can kind of retroactively fit them.
It's interesting to go back and think that we're actually putting more thought into the backstory of some of these episodes than clearly the writers did this early on.
It's true. But at this point, you know, the episodes are going to be in a bit of a circular fashion, really. You know, we're finding out, we're putting the pieces together about Grable. Roland's having a few visions. He's freaking out a lot. And it only really starts to click on a bit further when Nolette decides to switch off Grable's head, which is a really odd thing to say.
The sentence I bet you never thought you'd utter.
Yeah, I didn't think I'd say he goes to switch off his frozen head. It's just really odd. But yeah, and then it's at that point he becomes like full-on 80s cop show villain, doesn't he? Really, Nolette.
Yeah.
Because he goes to Roland and he's figured it out by now that it's Grable using Roland, and then he talks to Roland as Grable and gets the gun out and goes, I have a gun hidden. I was just like,
lucky me, I was carrying a gun.
With his slightly lispy voice, I have a gun hidden with my long flowing hair, and I'm an evil scientist with my gun. It's like, oh, whatever, mate. Just get on with it, will ya? And then Roland just twats him one. That's what I love. All that bigging up with the gun. Roland just gets like a whatever it is, a keyboard.
No fucking around. Just twats him with a keyboard.
Bosh. But it does allow for some like nice symmetry, I suppose, with the wind tunnel again and the climax getting that. Although I don't know about you, I thought that it's one of those things in drama where you have something like this. At the beginning, that wind tunnel didn't take long to kill that guy. In this, it's going for ages. And
it takes much, much longer.
And Nolette is still hanging on. And I'm not entirely convinced either that wind tunnel would have powered down that much for him not to get sucked in. Do you know what I mean? It's just a little bit like, well, the moment he goes in there, you kind of know, don't you, that he's probably not going to die. And that Mulder and Scully are on the way. And... it was. What did you think of this climax? Did you think it was a little bit anticlimactic? And
I think anticlimactic is probably the best way of putting it. You know, there was no real, there's no tension in them trying to get to them just in. You know, Mulder and Scully trying to get to them just in time, and because, like you say, again, a bit of kit this powerful, unless you have an emergency stop that's literally going to break the jet engine, no way does the suction go down that quickly. You know, that dude's going into that propeller. Anticlimactic is probably the best way of putting it. I didn't quite buy that Roland could suddenly remember how to turn off the fan. That seemed a bit... To use the words far-fetched when you're talking about the X-Files seems wrong.
Contrived, maybe?
But, yeah, contrived, definitely. You know, it seems a bit too convenient that suddenly... Roland was, you know, oh God, I'm going to say it, in control of his faculties.
I know what you mean, though.
But, you know, I mean, all of a sudden, you know, Roland knows how to operate this computer and turn off this really complicated bit of equipment. I don't buy it. I don't.
Yeah, it felt a lot like they didn't really know how to end the episode. And this is something that happens a lot in the first season of The X-Files. And, you know, it's not just the first season. There are quite a lot of X-Files episodes where they don't really know how to end it. They've set everything up really well. You've got a really compelling mystery, and then you get a bit of a flat ending, or it's quick, or it's uncertain, or, you know, sometimes it works really well. Yeah. Sometimes it's just a bit like they build up so much, and then they go, oh, well, how do we wrap it up then? Oh, yeah, we better do this.
Yeah, it's always the problem with their Monster of the Week episodes, isn't it? Where they spend so long building everything up, realise they've only got about 8 minutes of screen time left and they have to very quickly stop everything.
Yeah, exactly. And I think the only thing I quite liked was how Scully talks him down. I thought that was quite good in that, you know, you've got another, you know, she tries to reach him and doesn't react, you know, doesn't go too mad. She's like, Roland, just come back. I thought that was okay. But it did feel like it was just a bit, let's get a cheesy, long-haired, lispy villain in with a gun. Let's put him in, you know, and it's just, okay. Fine. We've got the idea of what it's all about. You know, I much preferred the tag scene. I much preferred the the scene where Mulder's trying to explain to the landlady what happened to Roland, and Scully kind of stops him because she kind of goes,
"Yeah,
he's all right." You know, she knows that Mulder's about to unload this wacko explanation as to what happened to Roland, and she goes, "He's okay, right?" Just there's a little look she gives Mulder as if to say she doesn't need to know all this, all right? Because she'll just go,
"Dude, just shut
you
up.
Fucking what?" Exactly. Yeah. And I liked the final, I liked the little interaction between Roland and Tracy at the end, which was really quite sad, you know, where he gives her his stars and everything. And that was nice. You know, there was some, and this is where I think it works the best. When it had the little character moments, I think, with Roland and her, and, you know, tried to get into who he was, it just didn't fully work. So yeah, that's basically it. You know, you get a final shot of Roland looking in the mirror, suggesting there's still a little... I think he's trying to convey the suggestion that maybe Grable's still in there a little bit, but I don't know if that paid off.
Yeah, it's kind of a... the second time I watched it, you know, the last couple of days, and I watched him, I think he's supposed to kind of be looking in the mirror and going, you know, he recognises himself?
Yeah, maybe.
But I can't quite tell if it's Roland recognising Roland or Roland recognising his twin... Or, I mean, it could be a few different things. It's not conveyed very well.
Mm.
You can see the point they're trying to make. It's just, it falls a little bit short.
Yeah. Which I think really is a perfect way to describe Roland as a whole, actually. You understand what they're trying to do. It doesn't really connect properly, you know, and you get this, you've got a very odd, you know, paranormality in this, which doesn't really have any kind of basis in anything. And it's not even really communicated perfectly either. It's mainly communicated through Roland's inner torment, which does and doesn't work in itself. And it can get a bit repetitive. Yeah. And even though there's some nice character points, it loses. And the same thing happened to Eve. And I mentioned Eve earlier. But it, again, has an intriguing setup and then doesn't really know what to do with it.
No, it's got no real payoff. And worse, it doesn't really... And Eve, I think, fell into this one a bit as well. Didn't really have the courage of its convictions to follow through with everything it wanted to do. And that's a real shame.
Yeah, I think that's true. I think that's true. So, that's Roland. Okay, well, normally we would have our Do You Believe In bit, but I don't really know there is one this week.
Frozen heads.
Do you believe in frozen heads that can telepathically communicate their complex equations to their disabled twin so they can exact revenge on three jet propulsion scientists?
That would be a really specific thing for me to believe in now, wouldn't it?
Do you? I want a yes or no, Brooker.
No, I do not.
Okay, thank you. We can move on. This is like when we did Young at Heart, because that was another one of them. Do you believe in salamanders, Hans? No. So we're just gonna leap over this and go straight into the X quiz. Okay, so you hadn't quite managed to when you were last on last week with Born Again, you didn't quite manage to match your score for Lazarus, which is still your top one.
Well, I embarrassed myself the last couple of weeks, I think. So I'm trying a bit harder this time around.
Do you think you're ready? Do you think you're ready to equal your score this time?
I'll give it a go.
Okay, right. Well, here we go. Five questions and a quote on Roland. Are you ready?
Yeah, go on then.
Okay, here we go. Question one. Name the laboratory in the teaser. Well, that we see throughout the show.
The Mahan Mahan Propulsion Lab?
Yes, well done. The Mahan 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 Potato Tomato, whatever.
Yeah.
question two. In that teaser, Dr. Nolet wants to push testing of the prototype jet engine to break what?
Mach 15?
Oh, well done, yes. Mach 15. Excellent. Two for two. This is good. This is going well. Okay, question three. What happened to the drummer at the wedding that Scully went to?
Oh, crap. It's such a throwaway bit of dialogue. I didn't even pay attention.
This is where I get you. This is where it is.
Yeah. No clue.
Okay, apparently the dog bit him. Yeah. So
wow. I've watched that episode twice in the last 3 days. I don't remember anyone mentioning a dog bite.
You don't listen to the small talk of Mulder and Scully. Well, there you go. The dog bit him, apparently. Wow. That's a story we need to know more of, I think. Maybe season 11. Okay, so question 4. How many stars are on Roland's picture?
Oh, crap.
He does say it in dialogue. And then he starts counting them when they hit the ground.
Shit. No. I didn't write that one down. I was too busy writing other numbers down.
It's 147, it turns out. You might like this question more, though. Okay, so question 5. What is the number password that Arthur Grable uses to log into his system that Roland uses?
15626.
Yes, well done. Because Mulder mentions that, doesn't he, repeatedly?
Yeah.
15626, excellent. Okay, that's 3 out of 5, that's not bad. So if you get the quote, this could be a 4 out of 6, that's not bad. So here we go. Obviously, character and who he's saying it to and when. So, if I have seen further than other men, it's because I have stood on the shoulders of giants.
It's towards the end of the episode in the lab when I've forgotten the guy's name. 80s bad guy realizes that.
Yeah.
realizes that Roland and Roland's twin are the same person.
Excellent. Excellent. There you go. Yeah. Not for a bonus point, but out of curiosity, do you know where that quote comes from? Because he is quoting somebody there.
Yeah, I know the quote. I don't know where it's from.
It's a quote by Isaac Newton. Yeah, originally said by Sir Isaac Newton. I don't know where, but obviously it's like one of those, you know, things that mad scientists use. You know, it's the kind of thing that Oppenheimer would have said, probably.
Yeah.
To justify their evil deeds. So, yeah, okay. 4 out of 6. That's not bad. You're crawling back up the ladder there. That's pretty good.
It's still better than my, like, 1 out of 6 from the other week. That's haunted me since we recorded it.
We don't talk about that. It's fine. You're still the champion, so it's okay. You know, you're allowed. You're allowed to do badly. But that was good. 4 out of 6. Excellent. You're doing well. Okay, so that's the end of Roland. We've got one more episode, and you're on for the finale. It's really exciting to cover the Erlenmeyer Flash next week before we go on a bit of an X break, shall we say? But thanks for joining me for Roland, Brooker. It's been great.
Thank you for having me on. I always love coming on to chat X Files.
Oh, cheers! Thank you. Until next week, where can anyone find you if they want to find more Brooker?
So I tend to spend much more than what is healthy amount of time moaning about stuff on Twitter. I talk films and music and games and things on Twitter. I'm at Brooker411. And I do a little bit of writing and podcasting for Failed Critics as well.
Awesome. Awesome stuff. So, look up Brooker on there. That's great. We're at the X_cast on Twitter and the XCast on Facebook. If you really want to look me up, and I'm on Twitter at Mr_Tony_Black, and you can find my writings and various things like that on there. And we're part of the Black Hole Media podcast network at Black Hole Media on Twitter or Black Hole Media on Facebook, and at www.blackholepodcast.com, where you can find all our podcasts and all different things going on. So look it up. So we'll be back for the season finale. How exciting. But until then, as ever, remember, trust no one.